Hi, welcome to the latest episode of the Geek Roulette Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Mike Spriegel.
And I am one of the hosts, John Lundquist.
Hey, how y'all doing?
How are you doing, everybody?
Welcome, welcome. This episode is going to be a July categories episode. We got about four or five different topics for us to go through. Before we do that, though, go through some minor housekeeping. First and foremost, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Geek Roulette, as well as subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen to us. By all means, feel free to utilize a great rating system or maybe a poor rating system.
Whatever works for you. We're cool like that.
Yeah. All of that being said, hey, cool. We're going to immediately jump right into recommendations. John, why don't you go first?
I am going to recommend something that's fairly old and something I'd only, I think, seen a few episodes here and there previously, but never really sat down and watched the whole thing, which is always something I meant to correct. And these last couple of weeks I have been. I have been watching The Venture Brothers, which you can stream on Hulu. Venture, I don't know, how would you best describe Venture Brothers? It's kind of like a...
It first started, I think, as a parody of Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
Of, you know, and almost like the Hardy Boys in Johnny Quest. Yeah, and then it kind of took a life of its own.
Yeah, but basically it's a story of two brothers. They're kind of loser scientist dad, their bodyguard Brock, and a cast of, I don't know, quite a few others, but it's just really well done. It's funny as hell, you know, definitely a precursor. I hate having to say this because it seems like I say it about quite a few things, but a precursor to like Rick and Morty. If you like that, you're probably definitely going to like this because the humor is kind of on that same vein. But very good stuff, well animated. It's definitely got its own personality. If you're into that sort of thing, go check out Venture Brothers on Hulu. They've got all seven seasons, I think, right now, and the eighth one is the one they're currently working on.
That is correct.
So yeah, go check out the seven seasons of Venture Brothers. That'll get you through the next couple months of summertime here. And then supposedly later this year at some point, they're going to release season eight, maybe early next year, but hopefully later this year. So check out the Venture Brothers. It's funny, good stuff. You will like it. It's neat.
My recommendation, I struggle to come up with a recommendation for this episode. So John said you recommend sandwiches.
Sandwiches.
So, hey guys, you ever sit there and think, man, I sure like lunch meat, but I wish there was a better way to transport it into my stomach. Why not use some bread and other condiments and fixings and make a sandwich?
Fuck yeah.
It's a portable way to carry meat without getting all the meat juices on your fingers. Instead, you have it on bread of your choice, except not banana bread. Mitch Hedberg would tell you that there's no way you should have a sandwich on banana bread.
That's fucked up. Don't do that.
You're not a member of this club. So my recommendation, for lack of any others, is sandwiches, except it's Subway. Don't ever get a sandwich at Subway. Come on. Yeah,
that's kind of last resort.
That's just a cry for help.
So now, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Is a hot dog a sandwich? I believe it is, yes.
Yeah. I think it eats just like a strict definition, but...
Well, let me say this. Would you say a gyro is a sandwich?
Maybe. You know? I'd maybe go gyro for a hot dog.
Gyros are referred to as sandwiches, so... Tacos could technically almost like a sandwich.
They could, yes. A spicy Mexican sandwich.
Well, then again, they have their also tortas as well, so.
Yeah, which is more, yeah. And those are damn good. Go get a torta. There's your recommendation. Don't just get a sandwich. Go get a torta somewhere, everybody.
Go Google torta and look it up and then salivate. Like, yeah, I need hot more tortas.
Hot dogs and beef and mayo and, yes, do it now. Tortas. There you go. See, we got your recommendation. Sandwiches and tortas.
Mm-hmm.
We're resourceful.
Our arbitrary list is that we are going to discuss our top three favorite summer albums to listen to. Now, what I mean by that, there's some albums that just feel right to play during the summertime, during the hot, you know, days, or when you got the nice sunset in the late evening, you know, that kind of thing. So, top three favorite summer albums. How about I go first?
Yeah, you go first, because I've really only got two, which I'll get into in a bit.
I'm going to say that one of my favorites, High Country from the Sword. I feel that that's just one of those albums that's definitely harkens a throwback to like old 70s style rock and music. Definitely something that's good to have on just in the background because of its various different types of tones and feels to it. I would say The Sword, High Country.
Nice. Like I said, I've only really got two because I don't know. I don't generally tend to think of like music as like a summer thing or summer like music. I mean, I get what you're saying, but it's not really a specific albums. I don't think there are songs here and there. I think that are definitely summer kind of songs, but not necessarily full blown albums. That being said, the first one I've got is a full blown album because I remember when it came out a couple years ago when I first listened to it. I think it came out either right at the beginning of summer or just like maybe late spring. And I remember just even thinking like, this is a good summertime album, just with the vibe it had and everything. And that is the Gorillaz' latest album, The Now Now, which in addition to being just a good summertime, just nice, light, fun, you know, album to listen to, it was also kind of a nice return to form for them because the album before that for the Gorillaz, I was really disappointed in and was kind of hoping that they weren't going down the shitter. And then this one came on. It's probably my second favorite album of theirs. But so yeah, the Gorillaz Now Now, good stuff, especially if you like the Gorillaz and a good summertime album.
My second one is going to be, and I sat there, I went back and forth between two or three different albums from this band, but I feel if there's one album that I think does a great job of, I think encapsulating summer, I would say that it would be The Song Remains the Same by Led Zeppelin. Now, you can also say Physical Graffiti, either of the two. I feel both albums do a great job of just having those nice summer, you know, just almost like those nice songs like that. Just like, and The Song Remains the Same, like Dancing Days, you know, it just feels like a great summer kind of songs. Or, you know, Dire Maker, you know, once again, just one of those fun kind of songs. Or even like the Rain song, you know, but I feel that those are like where Led Zeppelin, I think, hit their apex. I think after those albums right there, you know, that's when their talent started going down because the booze started getting more and so, but The Song Remains the Same from Led Zeppelin, or if you want, insert Physical Graffiti in there as well.
Yeah, you know, either one. My next one, kind of like I alluded to before, is more just like a kind of a set of songs, and partially just because it's kind of what I've been listening to this summer, or at least what I've been enjoying this summer. It's kind of fit just, you know, just in mood. And I've been doing a lot of like driving around down here, just checking out the countryside and stuff. And I've been listening to kind of a collection of like late 90s, early 2000s, like electronic music, like, oh, who, like Moby, Orbital, Chemical Brothers, Fatboy Slim, you know, that that sort of stuff. Just, and it's just kind of, I don't know, it's hit the right vibe. It's been nice and nostalgic for me, and it's kind of, a lot of it's kind of just mellow and kind of easygoing, kind of like you want your summertime to be. So that's been, it's been working for me this summer. So just, yeah, just checking out a kind of a retro collection of electronic music. It's been quite fun.
My last recommendation is going to be an album from Queens of the Stone Age. I almost said Songs for the Deaf, but I'm going to go with their album Like Clockwork. I feel that, once again, just a nice album that almost pays homage to so many different rock bands that came before, and just such a great moody and atmospheric album at certain points, but then also just a fun rocking album at other points. I feel definitely one of the better albums to come out of it at this point, Like Clockwork from Queens of the Stone Age.
Nice. Well played. I don't have a third one because I'm a loser.
So why don't you kill me?
Maybe. That's not really a very good summer song, though.
Like, actually, maybe. What kind of sparked this is, you think about it, the summer of like 94, there was like tons of albums that came out. It's like summer of 94, which Beck's Loser, or Beck's Mellow Gold, which had Loser on it, was one of them. But like back 1994, around this time, we had Mellow Gold, we had Sabotage from, or sorry, Ill Communication from the Beastie Boys, we had Weezer's self-titled album, we had, there was Pavement, where they had their big breakout, Cut Your Hair. They had Soundgarden, Super Unknown. You had the MTV Unplugged of Nirvana. It was actually a very solid summer for music.
It all went to the shitter after that.
No, it didn't. Anyhow, let's talk some of our main little topics here. We got about four or five for this July category episode. Let's first talk up about DC news. There's a few different tidbits of DC news that have been in the news. First, about a couple of weeks ago, there was words that Warner Brothers was in contact with Michael Keaton to be in the upcoming Flashpoint Flash movie, reprising his role as Bruce Wayne, or his version of Bruce Wayne and Batman. Now, for those of you not in the know, Flashpoint was a comic book event that DC did where they try to fix a lot of all their weird continuity issues by finding a way to have a multiverse and bringing it all together. Yeah. And that's kind of what I feel like they're doing with this, is that, hey, let's acknowledge Michael Keaton as being one of our Batmans. And then maybe all the other Batmans exist too, but they all exist in a different world. So like Christian Bale and Val Kilmer and so forth. What do you think about this?
I'm kind of two minds. I mean, one thing, as you can tell from my little shudders, like Flashpoint just seems like why would you make that like the first Flash movie? It was not a good comic book, and just to make that your jumping off Flash movie just seems like a bizarre choice in and of itself. That being said, I think Michael Keaton playing like an older Bruce Wayne, like, you know, like he might be in, you know, Batman Beyond or Kingdom Come or what, you know, any of the portrayals where we've had an older Bruce Wayne. I think if you're going to do one, he's going to be the guy. And I think if you cast anybody else, you know, unless he just flat out comes out and says, you know, no, I don't want to do this. If you cast anybody else, people are going to just be up in arms like, why didn't you get Michael Keaton? You know, which is kind of funny considering back in 89 when he was first cast, everybody was like, you can't put Michael Keaton in as Batman. He's a comedian. Oh, you can. You know, people were just like going crazy over, you know, much like a lot of casting things today do, that people point back to that. Like, you know, well, that's what everybody said about Michael Keaton, and look how that turned out. So I think it'd be cool. I just don't know about Flashpoint itself being a thing that I'm interested in.
Well, the other thing, too, is they're saying if they can't get Keaton, that they're going to try to get Christian Bale to come back and reprise Batman. And I guess what I'm trying to figure out is this, is that now last I heard, they were talking that any of the DC movies that they're going to have come out now aren't intertwined anymore, despite the fact they were previously. So Wonder Woman's now going to apparently be self-contained and Aquaman self-contained. I don't know. But yeah, the thing is that the WB shows just did a Crisis on Infinite Earth storyline where they had Kevin Conroy, the actor who voiced Batman in the animated series, in there as Bruce Wayne. They've already kind of tackled this. That's why it just feels weird that you already had a TV series that, like, their whole universe, it's already tackling this. And they're tackling this with very limited resources. And not only limited resources, but they're also tackling without having access to so many different main level DC characters. And now the movie universe is trying to almost emulate the same thing. It'd be one thing if they were to find a way to bridge the world between their TV universe and their movie universe. It's not going to happen, but I don't know. It's an interesting thing here. I'm trying to figure out what DC's trying to do at this point. I mean, it's...
Well, especially it feels like they've already got a very successful TV show with The Flash, you know, so it seems odd that they would want to try and curtail that into a whole separate movie franchise with a different Flash. It's like, and just, you know, I mean, people like us are going to know the difference, but it seems like you're just going to confuse most people and they're, you know, not going to be interested in one or the other. So it seems like an odd move.
Let me ask this, is there a Flash movie that's going to be made? Because the other thing that happened over the past few months is that news came out that Ezra Miller, the character or actor who plays the Flash in the Justice League movie, there was video footage of him choking a fan outside of a nightclub. So you already have also this now hanging over the entire thing, which again, DC just needs to get their ducks in a row. I don't know.
Yeah, they just need to catch a break for some reason.
I don't even know if it's just catch a break. They don't have a singular creative vision, and I think it definitely shows. Now, another thing that's come out news-wise on DC is Ray Fisher, the actor that played Cyborg in the Justice League movie, has been very public over the past week about his disliking of working with Joss Whedon in the Justice League movie,
This is one you're going to have to fill me in, because in the whole process of moving these past several weeks, I have been very unplugged from, like, the geek world. I have not looked at my geek news feed in like probably 2 or 3 weeks. So this is complete news to me. So what's the skinny on this one?
So what's going on with this is that Ray Fisher, now originally when the Justice League movie came out a few years ago, he said, hey, you know, working on this movie was great, and it was great working with Joss Whedon. He'll do a great job of making this movie. About a week or two ago, he came back out. He was doing some press, and he was saying, hey, I want to take back everything I ever said working with Joss. It was a horrible experience. He was very dismissive and abusive about the previous material that Scott had written. Or what I mean by Scott is Scott Snyder, who did, of course... Zack Snyder, who did all the previous DC movies like Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, and who was doing Justice League until his daughter unfortunately passed away midway through the production. Joss Whedon came in and almost redid the movie itself. And other things that have come out over the period of a week, Kevin Smith on his podcast came out and said that he was talking with people on the Rise of Skywalker set who had worked special effects on Justice League. And they echo the sentiment that just working with Whedon was very hard, that he was very abusive towards what was done before he got there. And, you know, also towards some of the cast. Whedon's not been a stranger to controversy. His ex-wife has said that she is, you know, hated Whedon very disappointed in Whedon, and that's why she left him, because of using his position to try to get with certain cast members of his previous shows, or that he uses a fake feminist behavior to make himself look better. There's other actors and actresses that have worked with Whedon that have said they, you know, didn't like working with him. Charisma Carpenter of both Buffy and Angel fame said that, you know, the reason she got, you know, kicked off of Angel is because she got pregnant. I think looking at this from two objective standpoints is this. First, I think I look at when Joss Whedon took over for Zack Snyder and Justice League, it almost felt the same situation like when Ron Howard took over for Miller and Lord on a Star Wars story, where you already had the majority of the film already made and done. Something happened and they decided to come in and retool the entire thing and redo the whole thing, and you had a whole disjointed mess. So that being said, you know, whatever happened with Justice League, which has made it into such the bad movie it is, I put that on DC and Warner for not trying to wrangle it all together and trying to make sure that they had a singular vision saying, hey, no, we're going to have a movie with Apocalypse instead of Steppenwolf is the villain, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, somebody like a producer or whoever should have definitely stepped in and been like, you know, hey, Whedon, we're going to bring you in on this, but, you know, this is the movie we're making. You know, obviously put your touches on it, but, you know, this is what we want. This is what we need. And you can definitely tell in the movie, because the movie's, you know, kind of a hot mess. It, you know, I didn't care for it when I first saw it. It wasn't horrible, but it certainly wasn't something I was like, ooh, that was good. I want to see it again, like you would think a Justice movie, you know, Justice League movie would be. And yeah, it's hard to, you know, dismiss this when you, like you said, you know, Joss Whedon's had all these other people come out. You know, I mean, one person, yeah, maybe it was just a bad experience and some sour grapes, but when you keep seeing things like this come out again and again, it's kind of hard to dismiss it like that.
It's definitely the bloom has come off his rose over the past decade or so. I think once Whedon's gotten past basically doing Avengers Age of Ultron, he's kind of just been in this weird place then where just, you know, for the past 5 years, more and more negative press keeps coming out about him. And I think part of it too is that with Joss Whedon, you know, he definitely loves his, like, you know, funny, snappy, you know, dialogue. I watched both the Avengers and Age of Ultron over this past week, and both are good movies, but I think both are also worked because he was working from the movies from the start. And I think there's things that you can tell that, you know, Marvel definitely reeled him in on for Age of Ultron, which, you know, he didn't like. And that's why eventually he would go on and do other things. But yeah, It's one of those things that come out, and I get like when a movie's coming out, you want the movie to do well. So like, yeah, everything was great with the movie. And then coming back later and saying, no, it all sucked. Well, it shows on that film. So
yeah, it does.
Moving on. Here's another thing that's been making its rounds around the internet, and it's been in low hush tones. So there's been talk on the internet and through various sites, and I don't know if it's just one site basically created like up a rumor of some sort and other sites are just feeding into it at this point. But apparently there is a movement right now where I guess with Favreau and Kathleen Kennedy with the Star Wars franchise, where they want to basically make the sequel trilogy non-canon and just go from there in a new, entirely new direction.
Yeah, and this and is almost
like reboot.
Yeah, and I can't believe this has gotten any traction whatsoever. The fact that, you know, that they would do something like, you know, we're going to reboot it, but just the sequel trilogy just seems insane. I mean, yeah, it's happened where you've rebooted franchises before, you know, Star Trek kind of probably being one of the more noteworthy ones lately. But that was, you know, almost a different, you know, Star Trek was in a different place at the time. And I think this is probably just more fans just that weren't happy with the sequel trilogy for whatever reason, whether they hated The Last Jedi or they hated Rise of Skywalker or whatever it was. I mean, I can't realistically see this being something that's going to happen. I can't see them like, oh, yeah, we're going to turn our back on all that hard work we did over the last decade or so here, and we're going to do something different. I think it's just, it, you know, I can see them maybe ignoring it, like not doing a whole lot with it. As far as like, you know, books or whatever, maybe they just decide to kind of like leave it on the back burner, you know, like they do with the prequel trilogy doesn't get a whole lot of love and stuff like that. But I can't see them going in and making like, we're going to make a whole new episode 7, 8, and 9. That just does not seem like something that's realistic at all.
I don't even know if it's making a new 7, 8, or 9. I think it's just the big thing is let's just, the movies happen, but let's say it's a different continuity. Like, and I think the one thing that everybody's clinging to is how they would do it is, especially when you consider that Dave Filoni was involved with Rebels and he's also were involved on Mandalorian and Clone Wars, is that there's a plot device. Well, I wouldn't say device, but a plot point in Rebels where there is almost like a time, you know, now, I wouldn't say time barrier, but something like a cross point where you could go back in time and change in the future or the past to change things. It's something that Ezra, you know, encounters and the Emperor's trying to, you know, get control of it as well. They're saying that this could be used as a way of like preventing the Emperor from ever coming back, or saying that the way they're going to do it is that they would make it so the Emperor did die with the Death Star and it would continue on differently. You know, you'd still have the events in The Mandalorian be The Mandalorian. It's just that, you know, you can build a new future after that. That is how I think reviled or how disappointed I think every, you know, both Marvel and everybody else, or Disney has been in basically what The Rise of Skywalker did is even entertain how this has gotten whatever traction it has. And I get it. It's just that I don't know if your casual fans are going to understand this. We're like, hey guys, whoops, it didn't really happen. It was a story from a different dimension and world.
Yeah. And then kind of like, you know, like I was saying before, when you have multiple Flash movies, if you do something like that, fans are, you know, like we said, the casual fans are just going to have no idea what's going on. You're going to confuse them, turn them off even more. You know, and then when future Star Wars movies come out, they're just going to have no idea what the heck is going on. They're just going to be confused even more. I mean, hell, throwing Darth Maul in the last couple of minutes of Solo threw enough people for a loop that, you know, doing something as major as this would just completely, you know, derail things.
And that's just it. It shouldn't throw you if you've watched like Rebels and if you watch Clone Wars, it's just, yeah, you don't have like an essential guide for like your casual fan, like, hey, here's what you need to watch or see to understand. And I think the hard thing is trying to go to a casual fan and say, hey, you should watch these two cartoons. I know you're an adult, but watch these cartoons. They're good and they'll help explain everything. And I don't think everybody has that ability to do that or the patience or, you know, temerity to do it as well. So,
yeah. And I mean, I'll say, as somebody who was, you know, not impressed with Rise of Skywalker, I'd be curious to kind of see, like, maybe in a fan fiction-y kind of way, what, you know, what else could have been done. But we kind of got that with the big script leak of, you know, what would have been called, what they call it, the Duel of Fates, the Colin Trevorrow version of episode 9 that we never got leaked out there. I feel like that's, you know, if you didn't like Rise of Skywalker, go read that. That's what could have been, and there's your time thing.
Well, and again, it's one of those things, not having a good vision, going back to our last topic we were talking about, I briefly mentioned about Solo. You know, there was, you know, the reason they kicked Miller and Lord off the Solo movie is because they said it was trying to make it too humorous. But then you look at what Miller and Lord went on to do, and they went did Spider-Man and Inside the Spider or Into the Spider-Verse, which is probably one of the best Spider-Man movies ever made. And it's like, you know what? All right, then maybe it was going to be a little bit more jokey. But then when I think about, like, what all the bad, horrible humor that was in Rise of Skywalker, it's like, no, how can you get mad at him for that and then let all of this fly? So,
yeah, exactly.
Yep. Speaking of movies, going on to our next topic. So theaters starting to try to reopen. I don't know for how long. I think that's the first thing I'm going to say is that now that we've seen so many more spikes in COVID-19, especially in various hotspots around the country, and now in different age groups that people weren't being reported previously, AMC said that they were going to reopen up and originally said that, hey, no masks are needed. Now they're saying, yeah, no, now masks are needed. And yeah, Alamo said that masks need to be done. And is this enough? Like, if they were to say, hey, John, in August, Black Widow is going to be on. They're going to release Black Widow in August. Would you go to a theater to watch it?
No, I think what I would do is I would wait for it to come out on streaming, and I would watch it on Disney Plus, or I would do what a lot of them seem to be doing now for some of these movies, is they're releasing it as like a $20 rental, which is basically like going to the movies, only you can watch it on your TV at home. But I have no desire whatsoever to go to a movie theater anytime in the near future. You know, that could hold out to the end of the year. I mean, there's a couple movies I want to see, you know, like, you know, Black Widow is one of them. Oh, like Tenet, that one by, I can't think of his name. We just talked about him a couple episodes ago. Christopher Nolan, the movie Tenet looks really interesting. Dune is supposed to be out by the end of the year, which, you know, that's even one that I would want to see on the big screen. But, like, unless this COVID thing takes a pretty sharp turn here in the next couple months, I don't see going back to movies, you know, anytime soon for myself.
Well, you know, AMC got wishy-washy and originally said, yeah, nobody wearing masks. I'm sorry, but I've seen how they've already cleaned movie theaters in the first place. And yeah, to sit there and say no masks? No. To be quite honest, one should almost be wearing masks when you go to a movie, regardless of if there was a virus or not, based on how most theaters are cleaned.
Movie theaters were not exactly hallowed halls for their sanitation.
Right. You know, so after a lot of outcry, like, no, just kidding. I know AMC is desperate at this point because from a financial standpoint, they're already on the brink of right now going bankrupt, and they can't afford another shutdown at this point. You know, and I think theaters are taking, like, right now, one movie that originally was going to still be planned for theaters, but it was just announced today that it's going to be going direct to digital video, was Tom Hanks' new war movie. What's the name of it?
Greyhound. It's going to be on Apple Plus.
Plus. And Tom Hanks was disappointed that it was going direct to digital and not going to get a theater release. Although the reviews I've heard of it said that it's a very pale, weak movie compared to all of Hanks' other war movie involvements he's been in before. But this may start becoming the new normal now, where, you know, digital releases are going to start becoming a bigger issue at this point, way everything's going. I know that you make money from the theaters itself, but if you have right now proven track records that, hey, money can be made from home still, well, why not do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we talked about this in a previous episode, I mean, for me, like, unless you've got a really big movie, like, you know, your Star Wars, your, you know, like I mentioned, Dune, and some of your Marvel movies, you know, Black Widow is one I wouldn't necessarily have to see on the big screen. But, you know, like, unless it's a big, spectacle like that, you know, I mean, what's, you know, do you really need to go in to see a movie? I mean, I watched Jojo Rabbit here the other day at home, and it was just as good on my TV as it probably would have been if I would have seen it in the theater. So, I mean, why spend the money and go to the hassle and, you know, these days take the risk of going to a movie theater if you don't have to?
Well, and when you see what shows have done, TV has done on, like, you know, in terms of, let's say, effects, I mean, watching Game of Thrones, like, all right, you had an entire saga just like that. And guess what? You can still, you know, do that on TV. Do you need to have these movies that are spending, like, you know, $200-300 billion, you know, $1 million in budget, you know, which a lot of that money that they spend on budget goes towards advertising and other little variables and factors. The game is going to change over this next year or two, especially if AMC goes under and you lose a huge method of distribution like that. But yeah, I can't see myself going to a theater anytime soon. I know drive-ins have been opening up and been showing a lot of classic movies, or, you know, what's out there too. And fine, drive-ins might, you know, still be a viable option to do that just because you have a little extra layer of, you know, courtesy in there. But that's only going to be a seasonal kind of thing. It's not something that's going to go into the winter. So,
and that's not going to prop up the whole movie industry by itself.
No siree, Bob. Moving on to our next topic. Now, this next topic, I'm very curious about, you know, this and some of your thoughts on it. So over the past month, at least a few weeks or so, there has been some episodes of popular TV shows that have been on streaming services where some of the creators or, you know, people in charge of those shows have gone and said, you know what? Looking back, we made some mistakes on some of the shows where we, you know, had characters doing blackface. As an example, on 30 Rock, there was such a show that was like that. Tina Fey, you know, said that, hey, when we did it back then, it was something that, you know, we probably shouldn't have done back then, but what the landscape of things were for humor, we thought it was going to be able to fly and didn't. And they asked, you know, a few episodes to be removed off of streaming services like Netflix, as well as, Hulu and a few others. And, you know, those services complied. And then it became a sweeping amount of change where there were then multiple different sitcoms over the past, let's say, decade plus, where they've done that same thing, where, like, hey, we had blackface featured in this episode. It's not something that we approve of. Like The Office, they took out an episode because of blackface from one of their later season episodes. But then some of the stations or some of the networks have been preemptive about how they've done things and have removed episodes. One such episode that was removed is the episode of Community in season 3 called Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. And the reason they
that episode, yeah, remind me why they pulled it down, because I have seen that one, but I don't remember anything problematic in a while.
The reason they did, and they even joke about it, is that they have an episode where they have Fat Neil, who's feeling depressed and almost suicidal. So they decide to play Dungeons and Dragons and cheer him up. When they get to the table, Chang also is there because he heard they were playing Dungeons and Dragons, and he's wearing makeup to look like an elven race called Drow, which Drows are darker elves. So one of the other characters, who's African-American, you know, makes a comment, don't think we're not going to let that blackface go unnoticed. But, you know, it's one of those things from a fantasy standpoint, you know, that's what the characters are perceived in, is actually being dark elves. Well, they didn't see it that way on Netflix or Hulu, so they removed the episode altogether. Now, the other episodes that have been removed, they said that they're going to work on editing out the blackface in those episodes, but they haven't said anything about this. Now, it's a weird thing because it coincides with also with the creators of Dungeons and Dragons basically saying that they're going to readdress race in their game because of how certain creatures such as orcs and dark elves like drow are made to look almost like negative stereotypes because they're considered eviler alignments because of their darker nature. So what's first and foremost, do you think that episode needed to be removed because of a simple gag about a dark elf?
That one I can kind of see maybe being a little bit borderline, like, okay, maybe they overreacted. That being said, you know, I'm a straight white guy, so I don't really get to pick what's if somebody else out there is like, you know, hey, I see that as offensive, I'm certainly not going to tell them, no, it's not. You know, personally, like I said, I think it's, you know, especially since they kind of address it in the show, like you said, you know, he's like, you know, hey, we're not going to let that blackface fly. But it's, you know, but it's a fantasy character, you know, fantasy race that's, you know, like I said, it's real borderline. And it's kind of one of those things, you know, in this day and age, you can't really fault them a whole lot for cutting it. But at the same time, I'd be like, I don't know. I think, you know, it's, you kind of let it go, I think, personally. But again, that's just me.
You know, the whole concept of race, you know, when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons, because when you take a look at dwarves, what do you feel dwarves are based off of? What stereotype?
Oh, they're what? They're Scottish generally, aren't they, usually?
There's many that say that dwarves are based off actually Jewish because of their love of jewelry and their greed.
Yeah, you know, I've never really seen it that way, but, you know, to each their own, I suppose.
But, I mean, but that's one perception that's been thrown out there. There's, you know, the perception of orcs automatically being evil because they're warrior-like people with, you know, that have dark skin, and same thing with the drow. You know, there's a lot of, especially in the wake of everything that's happened with the George, you know, Floyd murder over the past month or two, where now racial, you know, sensitivities become a bigger aspect of actually so many different avenues of geekdom at this point. So it's interesting seeing what is being considered important and what isn't. Like, as an example, you know, I understand removing the blackface episodes of 30 Rock, because I remember the episodes in question that they're pulling. Definitely, you know what, very blatant in terms of how, you know, they're doing it, as an example. You know, how things go forward. I mean, I was reading an article today, and it was about sitcoms and how the sitcoms in the 90s are a lot more evergreen because they weren't addressing any sort of political or current cultural topics. Instead, they were just basically just everyday kind of weird blunder sort of things, versus when shows in the 2000s started, like, you know, taking on an edgier humor and addressing some of these things. It was doing it almost as if, yeah, we're tiptoeing into this dark area of like comedy and humor. But now looking back, it's like, yeah, you did. But now in this current landscape, that's not cool. I mean, how do you think TV shows go forward now in terms of trying to address these types of situations or these types of stigmas in terms of race and humor?
I think you've definitely got to reexamine, you know, and, you know, it's probably almost, like you said, too late to be doing this. You know, we should have been looking at this a while ago, but, you know, you know, I hate to say better late than never, but I think it's definitely something you need to be cautious of. You know, you need to look at while you're writing these things and, you know, sketching them out and storyboarding them and whatever. I think every step you take, you have to kind of look and be like, you know, is this something that's going to be seen as potentially offensive? And I think that, and I think you can do that without, like, you know, because I think some people are like, oh, you're going to neuter the comedy then if you're making people, you know, tiptoe around these things. I think you can still do things that are edgy and, you know, maybe a little bit, you know, too far at times, but I think you can do that without, you know, taking race into the equation or, you know, or certain other things, you know, gender or sexuality or stuff like that. And I think you can still be funny and edgy with that, but I think you just have to be careful with how you do it and be smart about it. I think that's going to be the bottom line, is just be smart about it and not, you know, don't be stupid. I think, you know, be smart, don't be stupid, go figure. You know, and it's time to reexamine some of these things, you know, like you said, with Dungeons and Dragons reexamining their races. Again, I personally don't see a problem with like orcs or the dark elves. I actually think it's kind of, you know, most people I know think dark elves are one of the cooler races out there. But again, I'm a straight white guy, so I can't really say what other people might think about that. So I think if they're going to look at that and reexamine stuff like that, I think now's, you know, probably better late than never, but here we are.
I think the hard thing is there's always been the mentality of like, you know, there's the comedy has those weird gray fringe areas. And I think one thing that's been the hallmark of the 2000s going even into like the early 2000s, you know, 10s is that type of gray humor, I think, had a place where everybody was bringing awareness to other people by using it in either trying to use it in like either ironic or maybe satirical methods of saying, yeah, we know what we're saying doing right now is wrong, but hey, this is how ridiculous it looks because of the wrongness factor. Now I think it's become, I don't want to use the term humorless now, but it's now become one of those, I think, type of situations now where that's, there's so much more communication and awareness about it. It's like, you know what? No, it's not cool to make discussion about this, you know, type of thing at all. I still think there'll be humor out there that does try to do something like this, but I think for anything that's like your mainstream, like anything that's going to be a sitcom on a major network at this point, isn't even going to touch it at this point, you know, with a 10-foot pole.
No, you're going to get like YouTubers or something like that. They're going to start still be doing this just because like, oh, look, we're not afraid to be out there and edgy and stuff like that. But I think, you know, like you said, your bigger networks aren't going to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Well, and One thing going like off topic, like one thing that drives me, I think, nuts lately is the way people categorize certain people by using some of the dumbest terms out there. Like one term that I think for the past 3 to 4 years was one that was used as a form of insult was snowflake. Like, hey, you can't handle, well, you're such a delicate snowflake. You can't handle this type of thing. Ooh, go away, you wuss. And you know, that became such a generalized insult that I just like sat there and just cringed. And I think the newest insult that just drives me nuts is now that I keep hearing everybody refer to everything as Karens because of the terminology of using Karen as a female that over complains about things. But now I'm seeing like if a woman disagrees, it's like, hey, well, guess what? Quit being such a Karen. It's like, you know what? That's just a shitty, lazy generalization right there. That's basically saying, well, now, if a woman has an opinion I don't like, guess what? You must be a Karen. Just like if before, hey, you don't like this, you know, edgy or serious topic of humor, and I'm, you know, laughing about, you're a snowflake. And I think that's become, I think, one of the bigger problems now is that people have been trying to find a way to rationalize or find ways to diminish, I think, other now women, I guess, especially at this point, by saying, hey, you know what? You know, knock it off, Karen. And I'm like, no, just stop using that term, because now it's not even being used right. Now it's being used as just a general insult.
Yeah, I think like you said, it's a lazy way to dismiss somebody, you know. So instead of being smart about trying, you know, like why you disagree with somebody or why you don't like what they're saying, instead you're just like, oh, you're just a Karen, shut up, you know, rather than, well, this is why I disagree with you, or this is why I don't like your points or something. It's like, oh, you're just being a Karen, be quiet, you know. It's lazy and it's just dismissive, and yeah, not a fan either.
No, but I'm just seeing it way too much now. Yeah, even the mainstream media has just clutched onto it now so much at this point. It's like you're basically just completely undercutting all women now because of this Karen, just because there are a few out there. And
yeah,
let's move on. All right, last category topic we have. Amazon Prime is getting right now a new show from the Westworld creators, Jonathan Nolan. They are going to be bringing the world of Fallout to Amazon. John, initial thoughts on this?
So did you crap your pants when you saw this the other day?
No, because I have fairly good control of my bowels.
Maybe, I don't know. I suppose it depends on how much beer you've had.
Which has been none.
It's something. What's that?
Which has been none.
I've never played any of the Fallout games, so I don't really have any, you know, I don't have that nostalgia of like, oh my God, they're making a Fallout game. This is going to be awesome. So, I mean, I'm more just like cautiously optimistic of like, yeah, this might be kind of cool, because I've obviously heard how much fun they are and how great they are and what a great world they've built with it is. So I'll be curious to see if they can translate that over to live action TV show, which, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it'll be a wait and see for me. And when it comes out, you know, God only knows when. Have they even started filming it or anything? Or is this just like an announcement of, hey, we're making this?
It's just an announcement in the preliminary stuff of working on
the pilot. Yeah, like in 2 years when it comes out, I'll probably wait and see what the word of mouth is. And if I hear that it's pretty awesome, then I'll probably check it out. If it's not, then meh. And if it's bad, then I don't really have, you know, a horse in this race. So I'm not going to be offended if it's bad. I'm not going to think like, oh, how dare they sully the image of Fallout. So you know, I'm interested, but not super intrigued like a lot of people are.
I'm kind of curious why it hasn't been made into at least some sort of a multimedia, you know, like either a show or a movie or something already at this point. I mean, especially, and I see why it's definitely probably getting brought up now and being made in the show when you consider a lot of the themes above the game, how one of the main taglines of the game is war, war never changes. You know, how there's always the same endless cycle of fights that always seem to happen. And the games themselves, you know, have definitely a very quirky humor about the future and, you know, how the future, you know, turns out. You have, of course, the whole concept of the vaults where nuclear war is going to devastate the world. So everybody went that could have the money and privilege to do so went into vaults and lived underground for generations, not knowing what the world above was. Well, meanwhile, in the world above, there were people that did survive and live. And you have factions like the Brotherhood of Steel, which are the good guys versus, you know, trying to preserve technology versus the Enclave, who's trying to maintain power over the world. And you have all these other things such as super mutants and everything else. It's definitely a fascinating world for them to go into. There's a lot of different ways I think they could explore the actual, you know, game world itself. I think the one thing that's very good about the game too is that there is no, basically the protagonist of each game is just basically called, you know, the Vault, Wanderer, basically. There's no main characters in the game, so it's easy to create any character to be able to be your protagonist and not offend anybody. Like, hey, you know, like some other games, like as an example, like Mass Effect, you know, has like Commander Shepard, you know, so there's ways you can make a person mad because, hey, that's not how I made Commander Shepard, but having a generic person, you know, being brought to the screen as a protagonist is good. So, but here's my caveat. It's being made by the Westworld creators. And while Westworld did such an amazing job, I think, with the first season, their last two seasons definitely had a lot more issues. So I hope that they don't have the same pitfalls. And if they're going to make this show, they're at least smart enough to plot out a few season worth or what the end goal would be, I guess, for the show. And kind of like, hey, if they reach that end goal, the world is still vast enough where they can have a new story or a different part of like Fallout be explored.
Yeah, that is one thing, like, you know, as little bit of I know about Fallout, that's one thing is that it is kind of open world. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to follow the video game storyline. You know, you can still sit in that world and have that feel and that aesthetic and maybe even have it cross over the storyline of some of the games at some point. But, you know, you don't have to follow it note for note. As long as I think you get that feel, I think most fans, I think, would be happy with. And then, yeah, like you said, if you end up, you can do a season and then you can have second season be a completely different character and setting. You can have the third season be another one. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to have it have every season follows the first season with storyline and everything.
Or make it an anthology and then have the anthology carry over in other parts of different seasons at different points. You know, do something unique in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can have, you know, episodes from, you know, like you said, do an anthology for the first season or all the seasons and just have, you know, like it seem like they're not connected, but then maybe the last half of the season is these threads from the first part that you didn't think were connected at all start to come together and interplay with each other in a way that you maybe couldn't foresee. I think would be kind of an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, that's it. I'm going to start writing Westworld, Fallout.
Do it, man. Send in your resume.
And I would say this, if you haven't played the Fallout video games, definitely the first two Fallout games were very unique because they came out in the early 2000s in a very primitive type of way of interface. I think where Fallout definitely hit its stride is, and we're probably one of the more cherished of the two part of the games is Fallout 3, which was based in Washington, D.C. And then there was also Fallout New Vegas, which also Fallout in the Vegas or, you know, that area as well. Those are two probably the better ones. Fallout 4 was okay, and they have a Fallout multi-MMO that's you can play Fallout 76 on various consoles and PC, but none of them, I think, really captured what the magic of Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas were able to do.
Yeah, one of these days I'll have to play them. Just like I got to get back to Borderlands. I started playing Borderlands a couple weeks ago. With all the move, I've been obviously focused on other things, but Borderlands was fun.
Latest Borderlands, their third DLC for Borderlands 3 came out, which is almost like a Wild West themed Borderlands one. And yeah, enjoying that.
Nice.
So that seems to cover all of our topics we have.
Hooray. We talked about stuff and things.
We did. We do appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you have any positive or even negative reviews, feel free to leave it on whatever platform that you have. I am one of your hosts, Mike Spriegel.
And I am still one of the other hosts, John Lundquist.
Are you sure?
I think so. I don't know. We couldn't find my birth certificate for a little bit earlier this week, so it could have been somebody else, but then it turned up and that's what it said on there, so I'm going to go with it.
All right. I'm going to say I know you well enough. You're John, so.
Yay.
Thank you. Yes, we'll see you next time.
Have a good one, everybody.